Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're here today because the jury returned a verdict in the case of United States versus Peter Gerace, the owner of Farrell's Nightclub. Farrell's Nightclub, that was a place where a multitude of illegal activity took place, as this trial team here to my left has proven, and a jury accepted that proof. The defendant was convicted today of 8 of 9 counts in the indictment, and that includes 2 counts of bribery, conspiracy to bribe a public official, and bribery of a public official. And as you may recall, just a few months ago, this same trial team convicted that public official who was former DEA agent, Joseph Bongiovanni, of crimes that he committed also in connection with this case. The defendant was also convicted of maintaining a drug premise, and that is Farrell's Nightclub, conspiracy to distribute a multitude of drugs, including meth, cocaine, Adderall, heroin, and marijuana, conspiracy to commit sex trafficking, 2 counts of witness tampering, and distribution of cocaine. The defendant was acquitted of 1 count of witness tampering. In just a moment, a member of the trial team, the lead member of the trial team, Joseph Trippi, will speak more about the facts of this case. But before we get to that, I want to take a moment to express my gratitude to this trial team, to the agents involved in this case, and to everyone who spent the last 6-plus years of their life getting justice for the victims in this case, justice for this community, and justice for our society at large. FBI and HSI agents specifically spent many years of their lives investigating this case and putting the proof together, along with the trial team, especially with lead prosecutor Joseph Trippi. This was a lot of evidence to marshal and to pull together because Peter Gerace did not want to be caught. He put plans in place, including bribing a federal agent to ensure that his scheme to distribute drugs, to commit sex trafficking, would not be found. But he was wrong, because this dedicated trial team was able to marshal the evidence, connect the dots, and prove the case. Not only did they assist with investigating, the AUSAs assisted the agents with investigating, they also went through a lot in this case, in this whole case. They've been on trial pretty much for a full year, and twice trying the Bongiovanni case and then going straight into the Gerace case. And I'm bringing that up because they have endured personal attacks. They have endured issues that no prosecutor should have to when they're just doing their jobs. And I want to make that clear to the public. This is not an easy job, especially when you're going after people who have power and status and money in this community. But these prosecutors persevered, and here we are today with this verdict. The unwavering commitment of the prosecutors and the agents in this case to justice is clear and unequivocal. Throughout this case, they endured, they fought, they put together a case, they protected their reputations, and they did justice for this community. And I want you guys to know how in all I am of all of you for what you were able to do to get this verdict today. And I want to make that a public statement. Peter Gerace preyed upon some of the most vulnerable victims we have in this society. And those are people who are addicted to drugs, young women who were addicted to drugs. He used that to grow his business. He used that to make profits for his business. And today, he will no longer be able to do that. The truth is out. The verdict is in. Because of the sheer determination of the prosecutors, the team of agents, everybody who worked on this case pieced it together. This elaborate scheme created by Peter DeRace was unraveled and justice was done. So today, I want to say to the public, we are here to fight the good fight to make sure this community is safe from all people, regardless of their status, regardless of the fact if they're agents, law enforcement, business people. We are here to get justice. Nobody in this community will have to suffer or not be believed because they may be addicted to narcotics, drugs, because they may be sex trafficked. We're going to believe you if we can marshal the truth, the evidence, come forward and let us do our jobs. This trial team is beyond incredible, and I'm very proud of you guys today. All right, I'm going to turn the mic over to FBI Supervisory Special Agent Tina Taylor.
Good evening. My name is Tina Taylor. I'm the supervisor of the White Collar Crime Squad for the FBI in Buffalo. On behalf of the FBI, I want to thank everyone who worked on this case. I want to thank U.S. Attorney Trini Ross. I want to thank Assistant United States Attorneys Joe Trippi, Nick Cooper, Casey Chalbeck, and Paralegal Specialist Karen Champeau. I also want to thank the case agents from both the FBI and HSI. I want to thank the other federal agents, the victim specialists, the task force officers, the intelligence analyst, and all the support personnel who worked on this case. This case was so successful because of their hard work, their dedication to finding the truth, and their passion to seek justice for the victims in this case. But most of all, I want to thank the victims in this case, the victims who were not only brave enough to come forward and tell law enforcement what Peter DeRace and others did to them, but who got up on that witness stand and testified before the judge and the jury about the details of the darkest times in their lives. This is such an important case because it sheds a light on human trafficking and what it looks like in our community and communities like ours throughout the country. People have an impression of what human trafficking is from what they see on TV or in the movies. And it usually involves something like this: foreign victims who are brought over to the United States in containers, handcuffed, and forced into prostitution. And it can look like that, but it can also look like it did in this case. This case shows that traffickers like Peter DeRace control their victims using drugs and coerce their victims into commercial sex acts through drugs for pure profit and for sexual gratification. I want to take this opportunity. This is the first press conference of my 26-year career, and I want to take this opportunity to reach out to anyone who is currently being trafficked or who has been trafficked in the past and who has not told anybody. Please come forward. Use these victims as an example that you are not property, that your life matters, and that you can get out of this. You can survive this, but you can't do it without help. The federal government has the resources to not only put traffickers like Peter DeRace in jail so that he does not harm anybody else, but the federal government works with organizations like PATH, who specialize in providing services to human trafficking victims so that they can regain their lives and assimilate back into society. My hope is that if enough victims come forward, that one day the federal government will be able to eradicate human trafficking in this country. I also want to briefly address the public corruption convictions, which were addressed after the Bongiovanni trial. But please let me reiterate that the FBI's number one criminal priority is public corruption. And this case hit especially close to home because it was a federal law enforcement officer. Public officials are supposed to protect those they've sworn an oath to serve. And if they do not do that, the FBI will aggressively pursue them and hold them accountable. Thanks.
Next, you'll hear from Assistant Special Agent in Charge for Department of Homeland Security Investigations, Anthony Patron.
Good evening. I am Anthony Patron, the Deputy Special Agent in Charge of the Homeland Security Investigations Buffalo Field Office. I'd like to begin by thanking United States Attorney Trini Ross and her office for bringing this case to a successful conclusion and reaching a guilty verdict. I would also like to thank our law enforcement partners from the FBI Buffalo Field Office and the exceptional special agents, investigators, criminal analysts, and task force officers who supported this investigation. Homeland Security Investigations, or HSI, is the primary investigative arm of the Department of Homeland Security. HSI is charged with investigating transnational criminal organizations engaged in various crimes, including those related to drug smuggling and human trafficking. This case began as an investigation related to a drug trafficking organization operating in Western New York. The investigation revealed that Peter Gerace maintained a drug-involved premise and coerced young women to engage in commercial sex acts. Gerace then utilized his connections with public officials and witness intimidation to avoid detection and prosecution. In short, Peter Gerace used bribery, manipulation, and fear for his personal gain. Today, a federal grand jury convicted Peter Gerace on various charges related to these activities, as outlined by United States Attorney Trini Ross. Upon this conviction, we commend those who were brave enough to speak out, ensuring he faces the consequences for his crimes. As demonstrated in this investigation, HSI and our law enforcement partners are committed to safeguarding the vulnerable and ensuring the well-being of our Western New York community. Thank you.
Now I'll turn the podium over to the lead prosecutor, Joseph Trippi, but let me introduce the other prosecutors, Casey Chalbeck and Nick Cooper, and paralegal specialist extraordinaire Karen Champeau, who, along with this trial team, has been on trial for, been in trial for pretty much this entire year. So, Joe.
Thank you. Good evening. As everyone has said already, this case involved essentially the exploitation of women using drugs, other methods of coercion to make it look like they were the ones who were choosing that lifestyle. But the defendant knew what he was doing. He knew the methods he was implementing to profit off of their trauma, and he did it over and over and again for many, many years. And I think the comment that was made earlier, the victims here are the ones that were brave and deserve most of the credit here. Obviously, I personally want to thank everyone from the agents, investigators who worked on the case, to other members of the trial team, and all the supervisors along the way, including the U.S. attorney who supported the case through and through. While those women were being exploited year after year after year, some of whom we still don't even know the names of, the true names of, the defendant was being protected by a corrupt federal agent, and he had other corrupt connections, to include a New York State Supreme Court judge who was also involved in the sex acts that were occurring at Pharaoh's. And so I think this case strikes at the heart of everything that we're supposed to be investigating and prosecuting to the fullest extent, and we intend to continue to do that in cases like this. That's all I have to say.
Do either of you want to say anything? Nick, go for it.
I want to echo what everybody said about the victims in this case and in others, and I would take this moment to do what SSA Taylor did and encourage any people who are going through this to come forward. And it's difficult, and the victims in this case got through that difficulty and they told the truth about what happened to them, and that resulted in the outcome, the guilty verdict on count 5 for conspiracy to commit sex trafficking, as well as 7 other counts. And so they were very brave in doing that, and I encourage any victims that are suffering this to come forward and let us help. Thank you.
Any questions? I knew. I was looking at you. Yes, Pat.
Did this case rise and fall on the credibility of the dancers? I mean, could you have gotten a conviction without them? it seems like in the Bongiorno case, you get clusters of different types of people, kind of different witnesses. But here was a real emphasis on the dancers. So I'm wondering if they make this case.
I'm going to let somebody from the trial team address that, but I'll start by saying we let the jury deliberate. We really can't answer that question with 100% certainty. We could talk about the proof that was put in, the different proof in this case vis-a-vis the Bongiorno case, but only the jurors in their deliberations know why they came up with the verdict that they came up with. Do you want to address
sure.
that, Joe?
Obviously, there were more Pharaoh's dancers who testified in this trial than in the Bongiorno trial. The judge made certain rulings that, you know, enabled us to call more of those witnesses in this case than the Bongiorno case. Obviously, the judge has a job to do. And when making those rulings on evidence, it, to a certain extent, dictates the witnesses that we call. And I think that the rulings that were made were appropriate for the Bongiorno case. And that's why there was some distinctions in the proof for those of you who sat through both trials. But in this trial, while there were more dancers who testified, there was also a lot of evidence that corroborated them that if you sat through the trial, you saw through various records, photographs, things like that. So I wouldn't isolate any one person or any one thing. I think it was the totality of the evidence that carried the day. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah.
There were over a dozen dancers who testified. Some of them needed protection. Does that protection end today? Like, what happens now to these women that were expressing fear, Trace, the outlaws, all of it, that were getting some form of protection? Like, does that continue for a length of time?
I'm going to let FBI answer that question.
I can't talk about the specifics of that, but each dancer and their concerns will be addressed on an individual basis, and certainly the FBI and HSI will provide protection for them as needed.
And if anybody attacks or goes after any of our witnesses, and we could prove that, because it's your question, I'm answering your question.
But you're, okay, all right, I'm sorry.
Don't be so sensitive.
No, I thought you were saying that I was attacking them or something. I wouldn't do that, but I'm sorry I misunderstood what you were doing.
I'm just trying to address your question.
Okay, I didn't realize.
If anyone goes after any of the witnesses who testified in this trial because they were a witness in this trial, there are other charges that we will look into bringing against such individuals. I can assure you of that. Yes?
Given the nature of the complexities of Dorace's scheme, others involved, was there ever consideration of offering him a deal to maybe open up something broader, or is there something broader that you're investigating?
Well, we don't talk about pending investigations, and I know you know that. And something broader, I mean, we go where the evidence leads us in all of our investigations. If there's something else there, whether we have a cooperating witness or we gather other evidence, as was the case here, we were investigating something else and this came to light, we will follow the evidence where it takes us, and we will look at the law, and if the elements of a charge matches up with the evidence that we find, we will bring charges.
So Bongiorno was acquitted of taking a bribe from Gerace, and Gerace was convicted of giving a bribe to Bongiorno. To our readers and viewers, how does that make sense?
We have two different cases, as AUSA Trippi pointed out, Senior Litigation Counsel Trippi pointed out. We have different rulings from the judge. We have different evidence that goes in. We have different juries. It just all makes sense based on, like I like to say, the applicant pool, the evidence that went in, and the situation of how people heard the evidence in this case vis-a-vis the Bongiorno case. I don't know. Do you want to add to that?
I can add just a touch. In the Bongiorno case, they did convict of count one also, which was a conspiracy to defraud the United States, which had as an object of it the agreement to bribe. So it wasn't as though there was no bribery recognition in the Bongiorno case. They found Bongiorno guilty of conspiracy. The difference here is they also found Gerace guilty of not only conspiring to do that or agreeing with Bongiorno that he would be corrupt and protect him in exchange for bribes, but also the substantive count two bribery, and that's where I think you maybe get into some distinctions with the different evidence that came in at this trial versus the Bongiorno trial, and different juries are entitled to render different verdicts.
And as you know, in the first Bon Giovanni trial, we ended up with hung counts. So it really does depend on the jury, on the rulings, on, you know, what people, how they're deliberating and how they piece together the evidence that was presented to them. Yes?
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
I had no idea what was going on.
It's fine.
Right. So there were roughly, it was said in court, there were roughly 20-something law enforcement contacts on Jerace's phone. Very few of their names came up. I get it. It's not illegal to be in a strip club owner's cell phone. But some of them did deeds for him. And what I want to specifically ask about is the Chief DeWaga officer who called in one of the agent's plates that was trying to do drug buys in Pharaoh's. One, did that put that agent's life at risk? And two, who did it? And are you investigating that? And will this guy be or woman be charged for what they did, tried to do to one of your agents?
Obviously, there was testimony about that came up at trial, so I'm not going to go beyond the public record. But to the extent that there's additional information to follow up on, you know, we'll investigate whatever we have, and we can't comment on any ongoing investigations.
Why did you name, this is through the whole trial, you named some names, you vaguely mentioned, so you know, like this person, high profile, you know, elected leader, involved, you know, probably with trafficking of some sort, but you named some and not all. Was there a reason behind that? And then you vaguely, without naming, vaguely kind of described others.
Well, it anchors back to what we need to prove in the case, right? Like the objective is not to be as salacious or outlandish as possible in the trial. We have to look at what we need to do to prove the elements of the offense. And there were certain names that came to the forefront of what we needed to prove the elements of the offense. For example, the Supreme Court judge. That person was named. There were other people who were named that took part in certain actions that were tied to an element or provided strong context to the facts that would prove an element. There were other names that didn't rise to that level, that although someone may have been in a position to elaborate on certain people, it didn't tie back to an element in a substantial enough way to bring the name up, if that makes sense.
Probably not a good look for law enforcement for anyone to be on his phone, though, right?
I'm going to defer on that. That's not for me to speak on. Okay. Yeah.
Pat?
So, can you talk about drawing the distinction between, like, the Wayne Van Fleet's of Pharaoh's and other clientele?
The difference between?
The whales, the high spending. Oh. Wayne Van Fleet was a person that the crowd seemed talking about during the trial. And how are the other people who went in the VIP room, are they culpable? Are they part of sex trafficking without knowing it?
Do you understand the definition of sex trafficking? These are people who use fraud, force, or coercion to have people engage in sex for profit. And usually the profit is of the trafficker, not the person who's committing that. So if you're talking about the people who went into the VIP room, the people who engaged in sex but didn't use force, fraud, or coercion, then we wouldn't charge them under sex trafficking, if I understand correctly what you're asking. Okay, so the people that we're charging with sex trafficking are the people who are using force, fraud, or coercion to get individuals to engage in sex for monetary acts. So far as the particular people that you're talking about, I don't know if you want to address that, Joe?
I couldn't, in general terms. So,
can I clarify a little bit?
Yeah.
So,
gotcha.
So, Wayne Van Fleet wasn't charged, I'm just dead. So he wasn't charged, but he was a part. I mean, you named him as a partner of Jerace. Jerace knew who he was, what he's doing. But I mean, how about all the other, like the wedding parties?
So we tried to draw that distinction in between AUSA Cooper summation and in my rebuttal. The whales or the repeat customers, the big spenders, were there frequent, and they're there frequent and they're interacting very closely with certain dancers. And so to we had to prove that they either knew or recklessly disregarded that force, fraud, or coercion would be used. So the Wayne Van Fleets, who are up close and personal with a particular dancer for an extended period of time repeatedly, you could understand how that person, you could prove how they knew or disregarded the track marks that they saw on the dancer's arms, for example, and you could, through those whales or those big spenders, prove that knowledge element or that mens rea, the recklessness. Distinguished from the frat boy who shows up one night and goes into a dark VIP room and then leaves and doesn't ever come back, there's a clear distinction there between that person's ability to form that mental state. And so I think that gets at the heart of your question. The person who was there one night, you know, we could all have an opinion about whether you should go to a strip club, but that's not a crime if you don't have that mens rea. So there's a clear distinction between those repeat customers who would tip the VIP attendants a lot of money to have them not monitor cameras and go for half hour at a time with a dancer, and I think the person who's there one night at a wedding party that you're talking about. You don't want to criminalize that person when they likely had no idea about that situation.
And we probably couldn't prove it because we can't prove the elements of forced fraud or coercion, yes.
One of the, over the last 15, 20 years, it's been widely accepted, reported by officials and the media that, organized crime is all but gone in Western New York. Does this case dispel that to a certain degree, just knowing the complexities of the scheme?
I'm going to let you answer that. I don't really see the connection.
As charged in the indictment and as proven, the scheme related to what Bon Giovanni knew in terms of, or believed in terms of Italian organized crime, as well as what Gerace held himself out as, and whether that was a motive to engage in the scheme. And there was plenty of historical proof predating, I think, the news reporting that you're talking about of, Bon Giovanni growing up and sort of his father being friends with some of these people. That type of proof was in the case. And then you had Gerace sort of trading on some familial connections that he had. So that's why that part of the indictment charges, what Bon Giovanni knew or reasonably believed. And certainly, going back years and decades, there are vestiges of people who have that reputation in the law enforcement community. And so you can't protect those people, whether it's true or not. And that was how the case was charged, and that's, I think, what we proved.
Yes.
Can you just clarify how much time Gerace is facing now that we do have this guilty verdict?
Okay. Yeah, the maximum on the sex trafficking conspiracy is 20 years. Several of the other counts have a max the maximum on the sex trafficking is life. Several of the other counts have a 20-year maximum.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Is there a minimum on any basis? Is there like a mandatory minimum? Or
no. He's already a felon, right? So does that hurt him in a way for the sentencing?
Two things there. So sex trafficking conspiracy has a maximum of life, but it does not have a mandatory minimum, which is what he was convicted of. So no mandatory minimum. His prior federal felony is too old likely to count for purposes of criminal history points, which is how the sentencing guidelines work, because I think that was in 2005 or 6, so it's going to be too old. You basically have 10 years, and then those points drop off.
I have one last one. You all probably sat down with all these former dancers. Incredibly emotional testimony.
Yeah.
We're taught to sort of detach yourselves. It was very hard to do that. Very hard. How do you guys, unpack this at the end of the night, end of the week, next month? How do you unpack all this and, reflect on what you heard? I can just imagine that you there's a lot of stress dealing with this, and I'm just very curious how you move on from it and take on your next case
That's kind of really personal, I think, to each individual, and if you guys want to answer that, that's fine. Let me say this. Think of Simone Biles, who is the GOAT in gymnastics. And when we see her, she's doing tricks that are named after her because she either was the first to do them or nobody else could do them. And I think of this team in the same vein. They have a job to do, and they know how to do it. They are the goat of public corruption and sex trafficking prosecutions. And when you're the goat, you go out there and you make it look easy because you've done so much work in the background, meeting with the witnesses, going through the evidence again, making sure your case is locked down before you present it to the public. And so there's a lot of work that goes into preparing a case before we go to trial. These guys went to trial and they were completely professional. They proved their case, they put in the evidence, they worked with witnesses, some difficult, very emotional, like you said, especially with witnesses who have been abused and sex trafficked the way many of these witnesses were. I think it's a very personal question, but I will leave it up to you guys if you want to answer that.
I have a quick answer for you. Thanks, Trini. I think that's a fair question. What I would say is that it's difficult stuff to hear. It's difficult stuff to talk about. What I would tell you is that I'm really grateful to work with great people who listen. And there have been numerous times in this case and in other trafficking cases that I've worked on where if something's eating at you, you pick up the phone and you talk to Joe, or I have a supervisor named Megan Leidecker who I've spoken with about it before. And, you know, because you can only talk to people you work with about it, that's what you do. But if you're having a hard time, you pick up the phone and talk to somebody and, you know, get advice and just have somebody listen. And that's been helpful to me. And so I'm really grateful to my colleagues for that. That's the answer I have.
For me, we're people, right? But you got to balance that, build trust with the victims, while at the same time maintaining sort of a professional objectivity to make sure that, you know, you're doing your job and not becoming overly emotional about it. And it's a hard balance sometimes, but one that we're able to strike, because ultimately we have to make sure it's what's right for the case, what's right for the individual, and what's able to be presented in court. And again, we just talk to one another and sort of get through it in that regard. Again, you know, sometimes victims are reluctant, and it takes a lot of talking to them. And, you know, you heard us sum up on some of those distinctions. You know, witness A said more than witness B happened. Doesn't mean that witness A was lying. Maybe witness B wasn't ready to share the full scope of things. And so this is tough stuff, but maintaining your objectivity is important. So we really focus on that, while also trying to be people at the same time.
Casey. I don't have anything to add from what these guys have already said.
I will tell you, Special Supervisory Agent Taylor and I ran the Human Trafficking Task Force, the Western New York Human Trafficking Task Force, for about a decade together. And these are very tough cases because you have very vulnerable witnesses, victims, and people. You have to put them first. You have to give them what they need first, or they're not even a good witness. But as a human being, that's what we should do. So the reason this district has the Human Trafficking Task Force is so we're able to provide services to the victims as they need it. And when they're ready, they could come and work with us for the work that we do. It is a very, and the reason I'm giving so much praise to this team is because I've done this type of work, and I know how difficult it is when your case is hinging on the testimony of people who don't want to go in public and say the things they have to say of what happened to them and how it happened to them. To gain their trust, at least enough for them to tell their story publicly, is tremendous. And what happens behind the scenes in these type of cases is beyond tremendous. These are victims, and now survivors, who are not only addicted to drugs, but have had horrendous things happen to them for the pleasure of, in this case, Peter Gerace, for his monetary gain. It is a very difficult thing for these victims to come forward and do this, but what makes that happen is having prosecutors like this and having agents who care about them and let them know that they care about them. And we will continue to do that in this district, at least as long as I'm United States attorney, because I did it as a prosecutor on the line for, like I said, about a decade with Supervisory Special Agent Taylor, and we will continue to do that because it's that important. People should not be abused and used and manipulated and coerced into these type of acts. So I give 100% credit for these witnesses coming forward and testifying to this trial team, all four of them, and the victim specialists in this office.